that Yehuda, the very important person, and we have proved that he's a very important person at this time, why would he go with a prostitute? Why would he assume that? Right? And assuming that he would, that Yehuda is that type of a person just because his wife died, why should she assume that he's going to go with her? I mean, why should Tomer make so many assumptions that she will be able to trick him? You know that we have spoken about it in the past. A lot of decisions in those days were made according to signs, external signs. For instance, how does Yehuda decide that it's a good idea to sell him to Egypt? Because he sees at the time, while he's thinking, he sees a caravan going to Egypt and says, oh, that's a sign from heaven, I should sell him to Egypt. And it was. I mean, signs for those people that had a very highly developed intuition, right? Signs were very important. Sometimes signs were misleading, right? The typical example is David HaMelech with Bathsheba. Right? He sees by coincidence. It never happened to him before that he goes up on the roof, he sees a lady going to the mikveh, which is an unusual thing, but exactly should happen at that time that he goes up on the roof, which was already unlikely. And he knows the lady, and he knows that her husband is his enemy, a man who has to die because it's David's enemy. And he puts all the facts together, and there is an intuition that tells him, Bathsheba, she is the Eim HaMalchus. Malchus Israel has to come from Bathsheba. And he puts all the facts together and says, oh, it's a sign from heaven. I'm supposed to marry her right now. It was wrong. Timing was wrong. The signs were right. The timing was wrong. In other words, we are talking about people who relied very heavily on signs. Now, Tomer knew that if she goes to Yehuda openly and says, listen, this and this is the fact, I want you to marry me. If it's not Shiloh, you marry me. Right? If he has to decide on facts, he wouldn't do it because he would weigh the facts. He says, no, you know, you are a dangerous woman. Two husbands died already. There is no chiyuv. But she relies on the fact that if he doesn't recognize her, his intuition will lead him in the right direction. His intuition will lead him to her. Now, especially if you take Posuk 15 literally. Chazal don't, but there is such a thing as Pshutoi Shel Mikra. Pshutoi Shel Mikra says, Vayireo Yehudo, Yehudo Caesar, Vayachsheveo Lezono, he thinks she's a prostitute, Kichises Oponeo, her face was covered, so he didn't recognize her. Now, what attracted Yehuda to Tomer? Her beauty. He didn't even see her. So Chazal have a tradition that says Kichises Oponeo meant that while she was in his house, she never uncovered her face. Because you know that even up to this day, by the Arabs, it's a sign of modesty not to show your face by a woman. Right? So in those days, that was a sign of modesty. So Tomer used to cover her face when she was with Yehuda. That's why he didn't even know how she looked like. But in the simple meaning of the posuk, it means now she covered her face. So what attracted Yehuda to Tomer? Only that intuition that leads him to her and tells him you are doing the right thing. Right? More, the incredible fact that he trusted her with his signet, with his seal. Now, remember, the seal in those days for an important person was a very important thing. You don't trust your seal except for someone you trust blindly. Right? Because with that seal, you can make any commitment you want. If I give you my seal, my signet, you can do everything you want in my name. So does it make sense that Yehuda would trust this prostitute with his seal? Impossible. Unless intuitively he knows she's 100% trustworthy. Right? So we are obviously talking about a situation that was decided by external signs. In other words, she knows that she can trick Yehuda, not because Yehuda is a person who goes after prostitutes, but because she knows that the intuition of Yehuda fits with her intuition, that they, Yehuda and Tomer, have to build Malchus Israel, the kingdom of Israel. And that's exactly how it happens. He's supposed to live with her and have a child with her because that is Malchus Israel. Exactly what happens between Ruth and Boaz. Exactly. Right? The whole way that Ruth comes to him in the middle of the night like a prostitute. Remember the story? In the middle, like a prostitute, he comes to him. And he, right, who is a very righteous man, recognizes right away that that's the way, that's how Malchus Yisrael is going to come. And it's no coincidence, because Boaz is a direct descendant of Yehuda. And Malchus goes through, had in mind to marry her. As a matter of fact, the giving her the things were just, according to many commentaries, a maise kedushin, right? Meaning, he saw this as an act that wasn't just a deal with a prostitute. He saw it as much more. He didn't know what the meaning of it was. But obviously there was absolute trust, meaning it wasn't just a relationship for one night. He had absolute trust in her. He would have never given her all the signs of his greatness. The staff is a sign of his greatness, and the seal is a sign of his greatness, and his extra garment that he lives by her is also a sign of his greatness, of his special position. The proof that his position is very special is the fact that when they find out that Tomor is pregnant after 3 months, who makes the decision of what should be the penalty? Yehuda. Why? Yehuda is the judge of the place. Meaning, it's not just anybody. It's the judge of it. It's a very important person. Now,
maybe that's just because he was his father-in-law or something like that. And she didn't.
Some people say that they used to ask, like, the husbands, what do we do to your wife if she commits adultery?
And he was, right, the one in charge of her because the husband was dead.
Okay. Okay. That's possible. But what? Oh, first of all, he sent her back to her father. Second of all, if the idea is, even though some people say that what you are saying, that they would ask the member of the family that you sinned against, who should they have asked?
Shelah,
not Yehuda. Even according to this theory. So why do they go to Yehuda? So the other theory makes much more sense. That they asked Yehuda because of his position in the place, not because of his relation. Okay? So, now anymore. Because the reason why Tomor decides to go through the whole process here is because what? Shelah is already of age, it says clearly. In Posukudal, Kiroa Soki Godal Shelah, Shelah is not a cotton anymore. So therefore let him decide. So, she comes out, she shows the three things that she has, and she just says, by the way, whoever is the owner of these three things, he's the one that is the father of my child. And Yehuda recognizes it and admits. Now, the essence of Yehuda, Hodo'o, Yehuda is Hodo. Hodo is a double meaning. Hodo means what? To what? Thanksgiving, which is recognition of a favor. And it also means what? Mode b'miktas, admission, confession. You know, the essence of Yehuda is recognizing something which is true. That's the strength of Yehuda, and that is the act that expresses the strength of Yehuda, admission. He admits, and that's considered one of a very righteous act of Yehuda, and they have two sons, and the two sons are... So now, the story of how they are born, right? They are twins here. Zerach, the first one, the one who's supposed to come out first, they see his hand, they tie a ribbon, a red ribbon around his hand, but he never makes it first. The second one breaks through and comes out first, and he's called Peretz. Okay? Now, the second one is called Zerach. Now, the question is, why is this story of Yehuda right in the middle of the story of Yosef? Because if you take a look, the last posuk of chapter 37, right, and the first posuk of chapter 39 is just a repetition. Vamedoni mochru Yisrael mitzrayim lePotifar shris paroi, and Yosef was sold to Potiphar. Take a look, the first posuk of 39, veYosef urad leMitzrayim vaikno Potiphar. It's as if the Torah, like, cuts in the middle of a story. It's unusual. It never happens in the Torah, right? The Torah is not a modern novel, right? It's just in the middle of the story, you transfer to other character. It never happens. When you're in the middle of a story, you finish it, then you go to the other story. Why cut in the middle of the story of Yosef, the story of Yehuda? Now, the idea behind it is the following. You know that the idea of Yibum is the idea of Geula, redemption. Why is it the idea of redemption? Because it says like this. Because you know, what happens if the man refuses, the husband's brother refuses to give Yibum?
No,
you don't throw a shoe, but you take off the shoe, right? The woman takes off the shoe, right? And it says, and everybody around it has to say, Kochoy, that's what you do to the man who refuses to build the house of his brother. What does it mean, the refuses to build? The Malbim says it in Kiseitze. I found it in many, many other sources, the same idea. It says like this. The human soul craves to live in this world. It's like the human soul has two, almost we might say, contradictory forces. There is one force that keeps pulling the soul upwards towards God, but there is another force within the soul that keeps it downwards, attached to the body. The same way that a flame goes upwards, right? But at the same time has to keep attached to the wick, right? Because the flame knows, so to speak, that the moment it becomes separated from the wick, it has no independent life anymore. Which means like this, a soul without a body is a passive object. It's something completely passive. It can only receive, it can't grow, it can't do anything. Which means that a soul craves to be attached to a body. What happens when a person leaves this world? A certain part of his soul is transferred to the next generation. Therefore, that next generation becomes like a continuation of himself. In other words, you transfer to your children part of your soul. So even though part of your soul is separated from this world, you still have an attachment to this world through your children. This is why it's interesting. You know that in the custom the Jews have to say Yizkor, to Haskoras Neshamos, who do they mention? Only the last generation. Why don't they mention their grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-great-grandparents? Because they are all included in their parents. Now, by mentioning their parents, right, they are mentioning everybody because they are all included in their parents. And when they will pass away, right, all their ancestors will be included in themselves. I don't even know whether it's a sudden process or not. I don't know exactly, but there is a process of transference of some, what they call, sparks of the soul to the next generation. What happens when a person dies without any children? So there is an enormous pain caused to the soul by its not being able to go to the next generation. That has a solution. If his wife, that he was attached to, marries a member of his family, and the closer he is to him with family ties, the better, somehow that will allow through that child to receive the sparks of the soul of the dead brother and live again through the child. That is the meaning. If you take a look in Parshas Kiseitze concerning the law of Yibum, you see clearly that the idea is to let the brother live through the next generation. Right? Somehow you have solved the problem. Right? That's called redemption. You are redeeming the dead soul. In other words, you are finding the solution to the enormous pain caused by its being cut off from the world. Okay? That's called Geulo. Continuity, right? This idea of continuity. Now, in the Sefer, in the Rabbeinu Bechaye, Rabbeinu Bachya, right? He has a lot of pirushim that have very Kabbalistic sources. He says like this, is it a coincidence that Malchus Yehuda, right, always comes, I mean, there is a repetition of similar stories. Yehuda and Tamar, right? Boaz and Ruth, David and Bathsheba, they always have something, we can almost say, indecent to them, and that indecency is overcome, and something good comes out of it. Why is it? More, he says. Take a look at the story of the two children, of the twins that Tamar has. Through which does Malchus come out to, from? Yes, they have two sons, Zerach, Peretz and Zerach. Right? Zerach, the symbolism of Zerach, let's see what association can we have. What does Zerach mean in Hebrew? Zerach, what? Not Zerah, Zayin, Resh, Ayin, what?
Grow.
To shine, shine. The association is very obvious. Zerach represents the sun. Now, what breaks through the darkness? There's the moon, Peretz. Somehow, Malchus Yehuda is associated with the moon. And that's not the only place that we find it. By Kiddush Levono, right? What is the recurrent theme in Kiddush Levono? David Melech Yisrael Chai V'Kayom. Somehow, the moon-like quality of Malchus Yehuda, gives you the idea of the association with the moon. What's the idea behind it? Says the Rabbeinu Bechaya the following. The sun is just light. You are not even aware of the darkness. The purpose of Malchus, of kingdom in this world, what is it? Kingdom is here in this world in order to break through evil, to break through wickedness, to break through darkness, and bring out the light. In other words, the whole idea of Mashiach is to come after the Golus. Meaning, without Golus, there is no Mashiach. Without darkness, there is no light. So the whole idea of Malchus is to break through something wicked in order to come out something good. That's the whole idea of admission. The strength of admission you can't experience unless you do something wrong. Otherwise, what is there to admit? Which means like this. A person can say the truth all his life, but he will never show the strength of somebody who did something wrong and then admits. If you always say the truth but you never do anything wrong, that's Zerach, that's the sun. There is no Malchus in it. There is no strength that's seen unless there is something indecent that you admit to. What does the Gemara say? What is the difference between Shaul and David HaMelech? Shaul committed one sin and he's finished. David committed more than one sin and he maintains the Melucho. What is the difference, says the Gemara? Because David admitted. He admits his sin. What is that? So what? Because that's the essence of Malchus. The essence of Malchus based David is to break through, right? To shine through the darkness. That's the essence of the moon, to shine through the darkness. Says the Rabbeinu Bechaye, incredibly, he says, therefore, Malchus based David, if we count all the kings of Judah, from David HaMelech until Tzidkiyahu, until the last one, you'll find 29. Why 29? Those are 29 days of the moon. In other words, Malchus Beis David is the moon, he says.
David to whom is asking?
To Tzidkiyahu. That is the S now. Therefore, Yehuda, in this experience, establishes Malchus, which is the establishment of the light through the darkness, which is Mashiach, which is the final redemption. Okay? What does Yosef represent with his being sold to Egypt? Exile. When does exile really start? In fact, when are we really avodim? When does it start, the actual being avodim? When he's sold to Potiphar. So the moment he's sold to Potiphar, the Torah cuts through and already establishes what? The redemption, in order that the redemption should come at the time that the exile is being established. That's the reason that Torah cuts through the story of Yosef, brings in the story of Yehuda, which is the story of Malchus, which is the story of breaking through the darkness, which is the story of Peretz, it breaks through. Zerach is not good enough. It has to be Peretz. It has to be Yehuda admitting his mistake. That establishes Malchus Yisrael. That is Mashiach. Mashiach can only come through the darkness. We have to go through the exile. Mashiach can't come in the middle of the day. He has to come when it's still dark, when it's covered, when things are unclear. That is Mashiach. That's the strength of Yehuda. Okay, let's stop it.
What?
What again?
What
it's not a mistake. He's admitting that it's his responsibility. That admission of something indecent that he did is his strength. I mean, it wasn't indecent in the sense that once you realize that everything was a sign, but on the surface it's an indecent act. I mean, it was difficult for him to admit in public that it's all his fault. Right?